Leo Frank's Willing Mythmakers. Quote, "Observe the operations of the white man. He is successful. He makes no excuses for his failures. He works hard in a collective manner. You do the same." End quote. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. After almost a century of energetic circulation, the, quote, "hang the Jew or we'll hang you," end quote, claim is proved to be mere propaganda for the promotion of the Leo Frank legend. The sheer number of respectable authors that have trafficked in some version of the falsehood is truly breathtaking. Major publishers like Henry Holt, HarperCollins, and Oxford University Press, and academic centers like American Jewish Historical Society, the Jewish Virtual Library, and the American Jewish Archives have allowed the false claim to find its way into the most scholarly works, some being standards in their field. Here are just some of the many published variations on the "hang the Jew" fable, which was once falsely promoted by these authors and publishers as the only truth of the Leo Frank case. Source: Abraham Foxman, former national director of the Anti-Defamation League. Myth. Quote, "His trial was a spectacle. Threats, intimidation, and a boisterous crowd outside chanting 'kill the Jew' and 'hang the Jew' could easily be heard through the courtroom's open windows." End quote. Source: Anti-Defamation League website. Myth. Quote, "Hang the Jew, hang the Jew. This was the cry of the furious mob outside the Atlanta courthouse." End quote. Source: Will Haygood, from Showdown, Thurgood Marshall and the Supreme Court Nomination That Changed America. Myth. Quote, "Frank had his day in court. 'Hang the Jew or we'll hang you,' were some of the shouts he heard while seated." End quote. Source: S. L. Alexander, from Media and American Courts. Myth. Quote, "During the trial, crowds outside the courthouse had chanted, 'hang the Jew or we'll hang you.'" End quote. Source: Harry Golden, various books and articles. Myth. Quote, "The crowd shouted to the jury, 'hang the Jew or we'll hang you.' Crowds shouted, 'hang the Jew.' The mob shouted, 'hang the Jew or we'll hang you.' Even after the crowds shouted, 'hang the Jew,' and a tent evangelist thundered at the open window to the spectators in the courtroom, 'The Jew is the synagogue of Satan.'" End quote. Source: C. Van Woodward, from Tom Watson. Myth. Quote, "Hang the Jew or we will hang you." End quote. Source: ADL. From Hate Groups in America: A Record of Bigotry and Violence. Myth. Quote, "Mobs outside the courthouse calling for his death." End quote. Source: Raphael Madoff, from Jewish Americans and Political Participation: A Reference Handbook. Myth. Quote, "Incited by the rabble-rousing Georgia politician and publisher Tom Watson, anti-Semitic mobs filled the courtroom and surrounded the courthouse during the trial, making a guilty verdict almost inevitable." End quote. Source: Dale Schwartz, an ADL attorney. Myth. Quote, "The jurors were intimidated during the trial by crowds outside the courthouse, which would chant 'hang the Jew or we'll hang you' as they entered. There were lots of windows being broken. Rich's department store had a standing order to replace their plate glass windows every morning during this period." End quote. Source: Frey and Thompson, from The Silent and the Damned. Myth. Quote, "The mob was breathing vengeance in the very face of the judge and jury." End quote. Source: American Jewish Historical Society. Myth. Quote, "Crowds outside the courthouse shouted, 'hang the Jew.' One juror had been overheard to say before his selection for the jury, "I am glad they indicted the goddamn Jew. They ought to take him out and lynch him. And if I get on that jury, I'll hang that Jew for sure." End quote. Source: New Orleans Rabbi Max Heller. Myth: quote, "The courtroom was surrounded by a vociferous mob whose violent demonstrations against the accused could not but have reached the ears of the judge and jury." End quote. Source: Jules Archer from Riot, A History of Mob Action in the United States. Myth: quote, "One notorious riot involved Leo Frank. Notes were sent to court officials: hang the Jew or we will hang you." End quote. Source: Nathan Ausubel from The Book of Jewish Knowledge. Myth: quote, "Outside the courthouse and the prison where he was confined, the mob chanted, 'Hang the Jew!'" End quote. Source: Arthur G. Powell from I Can Go Home Again. Myth: quote, "With the mob in the streets around the courthouse grumbling for vengeance and howling for his blood." End quote. Source: American Israelite throughout several issues. Myth: quote, "The courthouse was surrounded by a howling mob. The windows of the courtroom and the jury room were open, and the cries of the mob, 'To hang the Jew,' could be plainly heard." End quote. Quote, "The air about the courtroom was surcharged with mob violence." End quote. Quote, "Fanaticism, fostered by the Protestant Ministers Association, which has manifested itself in a blind fury that would do credit to a mad mullah. It is no marvel that justice may have miscarried, and that a jury composed of ordinary mortals may have feared for their very lives, with a mob howling and threatening beneath the open windows of the courtroom." End quote. Quote, "Outside the courtroom, a howling mob had gathered, and under the window of the jury room, they shouted epithets of hostility to anyone who would stand up for Frank. 'Get the Jew' was the most frequently heard expression. The public clamored for his conviction and death. The trial court was terrorized." End quote. Quote, "The moment the cry of 'Hang the Jew' was raised, the case was made one of interest to every Jew in the United States." End quote. Source: Liva Baker from The Justice from Beacon Hill, The Life and Times of Oliver Wendell Holmes. Myth: quote, "But what really convicted Leo Frank was the crowd. Its chanting of 'Hang the Jew or we'll hang you' could be heard in the courtroom through the open windows by lawyers, judge, jury, witnesses, and the defendant himself." End quote. Source: Harry Barnard from The Forging of an American Jew, The Life and Times of Judge Julian W. Mack. Myth: quote, "Hang the Jew or we will hang you," they screamed at the jurors. End quote. Source: Mark K. Bauman from Dixie Diaspora, An Anthology of Southern Jewish History. Myth: quote, "The crowd outside the courtroom chanted, 'Hang the Jew, hang the Jew.'" End quote. Source: Mark Bauman in the Georgia Historical Quarterly. Myth: quote, "In a sensational trial in an anti-Semitic atmosphere, Frank was found guilty of murder and sentenced to death." End quote. Source: Larry Tye from Homelands, Portraits of the New Jewish Diaspora. Myth: quote, "Every day for a month, jurors entering and exiting the courthouse had to wade through crowds screaming, 'The Jew is the synagogue of Satan,' and 'Crack that Jew's neck,' while defense lawyers and the judge were warned they would not leave the courtroom alive if the damned Jew was acquitted." End quote. Source: Nathan C. Belth, ADL official, from A Promise to Keep. Myth: quote, "Over and over, louder and louder, the men repeated the chant, Hang the Jew! Hang the Jew! End quote. Source: David Harry Bennett, from The Party of Fear. Myth: quote, the jury received messages threatening, hang the Jew or we will hang you. End quote. Source: Kristen Boudreau, from The Spectacle of Death, Populist Literary Responses to American Capital Cases. Myth: quote, unless you hang the Jew, we will get you. End quote. Source: Tim Cousins, from Tramp Royal. Myth: quote, they shouted at Frank's lawyers, hang the Jew or we'll hang you. End quote. Source: Leonard Dinnerstein, from Uneasy at Home. Myth: quote, Frank's lawyers had received anonymous phone calls with the cryptic message, if they don't hang that Jew, we'll hang you. Crowds outside of the courtroom frequently hurled epithets like, lynch him, and crack that Jew's neck. The jury was also threatened with lynching if it did not hang that damned Sheeny. End quote. See also Dinnerstein in Atlanta in the Progressive Era, page 145, wherein he makes the same claim. None of Frank's attorneys ever reported this. Neither the judge nor any one of the jurors ever reported this. Source: Lawrence Jeffrey Epstein, from At the Edge of a Dream. Myth: quote, the New York Herald Tribune said, mobs choked the area around the courthouse. Men with rifles stood at the open windows, some aimed at the jury, some aimed at the judge. These men repeated the chant, hang the Jew, hang the Jew. End quote. Source: Everybody's Magazine, March 1915. Myth: quote, officials were the recipients of threatening letters and messages. Hang the Jew or we'll hang you. End quote. Source: Stanley Feldstein, from The Land That I Show You. Myth: quote, crack the Jew's neck, they shouted. Lynch him. Inside, spectators followed suit. Some officials, declared another spectator, received threatening phone calls and notes demanding that they hang the Jew or we'll hang you. One member of the jury reported that he wasn't sure of anything except that unless, end quote, we, quote, convicted Frank, end quote, we, quote, would never get home alive. The courtroom and streets were filled with an angry, determined crowd ready to seize the defendant. On the streets, unseemly demonstrations in condemnation of Frank were heard by the judge and jury. The judge was powerless to prevent these outbursts in the courtroom, and the police were unable to control the crowd outside. The mob, said one eyewitness, was breathing vengeance in the very face of the judge and jury. End quote. Source: Norman H. Finkelstein, from Forged in Freedom. Myth: quote, chants of hang the Jew and the inflammatory words of traveling preachers, the Jew is the synagogue of Satan, nearly drowned out the legal proceedings inside. Hawkers on the street sold a variety of anti-Semitic pamphlets. End quote. Source: Louis Fisher, from American Constitutional Law. Myth: quote, his trial was dominated by angry crowds chanting, hang the Jew. End quote. Source: Leo Frank, quoted in The Frank Case, from American Israelite. Myth: quote, an atmosphere seething with mob violence and clamor for my life. End quote. Source: Ronald Gottsman and Richard Maxwell Brown, editors of Violence in America. Myth: quote, shouting threats to the jury through the open windows, hang the Jew. End quote. Source: Melissa Faye Green, from The Temple Bombing. Myth. Quote, every day for a month, the jurors traveled to and from the courthouse through the mobbed streets, where people cried out, "Crack that Jew's neck!" and "Hang the damned Sheeny!" And the judge and the defense attorneys were threatened. End quote. Source: David C. Gross from The Jewish People's Almanac. Myth. Quote, over and over and louder, the men repeated the same chant. Hang the Jew! Hang the Jew! Hang the Jew! End quote. Source: Jeffrey S. Gourock and Jacaranda Wiley, from Anti-Semitism in America. Myth. Quote, crack the Jew's neck! End quote. Source: Ben Haas from KKK. Myth. Quote, threatening mobs gathered about the courthouse during the trial, crying, "Hang the Jew!" End quote. Source: Stuart Allen Rockoff from Jewish Racial Identity in Pittsburgh and Atlanta, 1890 to 1930. PhD dissertation. Myth. Quote, in late July of 1913, Frank's trial began. Large crowds of people gathered outside the courthouse to root on the prosecution and threaten the jury as they entered and exited the building, yelling such things as, "Kill the Jew." End quote. Source: Kermit Hall and David Scott Clark, from The Oxford Companion to American Law. Myth. Quote, shouts of "Hang the Jew" were periodically heard in the courtroom. End quote. Source: Jewish Currents. Myth. Quote, in the sweltering heat, their tribal chant, like a tidal surge, "Hang the Jew!" End quote. Source: Robert Michael from A Concise History of American Antisemitism. Myth. Quote, the jurors had to pass through a barrage of anti-Semitic curses from the crowds, numbering in the thousands at the courthouse. A favorite epithet was taken straight from the New Testament book of Revelation. 2939. The Jew is the synagogue of Satan. End quote. Source: Jewish Virtual Library. Myth. Quote, crowds outside the courthouse shouted, "Hang the Jew!" End quote. Source: Michael J. Klarman. From Jim Crow to Civil Rights. Myth. Quote, each day, trial participants could hear a mob screaming, "Hang the Jew!" through the open windows. End quote. Source: William Kunstler from And Justice for All. Myth. Quote, the courthouse was ringed by thousands of people who shouted such pleasantries as, "Hang the Jew or we'll hang you." End quote. Source: Howard J. Langer from The History of the Holocaust. Myth. Quote, jurors heard mobs shouting, "Hang the Jew," through courthouse windows. End quote. Source: Elisa Labo from First Person Jewish. Myth. Quote, a rowdy crowd outside the trial allegedly shouted, "Hang the Jew." End quote. Source: Leonard W. Levy et al. From Encyclopedia of the American Constitution. Myth. Quote, a mob shouting outside the courtroom, "Hang the Jew or we'll hang you." End quote. Source: Alonzo Mann in 1982, 69 years after he had testified at the trial as a 13-year-old office boy. Myth. Quote, there were crowds in the street who were angry and who were saying that Leo Frank should die. Some were yelling things like, "Kill the Jew!" End quote. Source: Jacob Rader Marcus, from Critical Studies in American Jewish History. Myth, quote, crack the Jew's neck, end quote. Source, Alan Middleman, Robert A. Leicht, and Jonathan D. Sama, from Jewish Polity and American Civil Society. Myth, quote, only a few months before the ADL's founding, 1913, a young Jew named Leo Frank had been convicted of rape and murder after a trial by prejudice in which mobs choked the courthouse area screaming, hang the Jew, end quote. Source, Gustavus Myers and Henry M. Christman, from History of Bigotry in the United States. Myth, quote, hang the Jew or we will hang you, was the purport of notifications to court officials, and these menaces were reinforced by threatening mobs choking the area around the courthouse and adjacent approaches. End quote. Source, Lewis J. Paper, from Brandeis, An Intimate Biography. Myth, quote, the crowds outside the courthouse kept chanting, hang the Jew, end quote. Source, Shelley Kapnek Rosenberg, et al., from History of the Jews in America. Myth, quote, although the case against him was weak, crowds stood outside the courthouse screaming, hang the Jew, end quote. Source, Jonathan D. Sama, from The American Jewish Experience. Sama, from American Judaism, A History. Myth, quote, crowds outside the courthouse chanted, hang the Jew, end quote. Source, Harry Simonhoff, from Saga of American Jewry. Myth, quote, the court officials received messages, hang the Jew or we will hang you, end quote. Source, Howard Simons, from Jewish Times. Myth, quote, as the jury came in every day, the crowd outside was reported by the press to chant, hang the Jew or we'll hang you. There were lots of windows being broken, end quote. Source, Southern Exposure, Institute for Southern Studies. Myth, quote, crowds gathered outside the courthouse chanted, hang the Jew, end quote. Source, Samuel Tenenbaum, from Why Men Hate. Myth, quote, they heard mobs shouting, hang the Jew or we will hang you, end quote. Source, Elaine Marie Alfin, from An Unspeakable Crime. Myth, quote, the crowd outside. People cheered, booed, and shouted at the witnesses, the lawyers, the judge, and even the jury. They threatened, hang that Jew or we'll hang you, end quote. Source, Michael Bronsky, from The Return of the Repressed and Shofar. Myth, quote, during the trial, the growing mob outside of the courthouse would give voice to such sentiments as wanting the damned Jew to be convicted. End quote. Quote, the popular sentiment on the streets specifically equated Frank's Jewishness with his guilt. End quote. Source, His Life to Vent Public Prejudice, Washington Post. Myth, quote, shall Leo M. Frank go to his death a victim of an ancient and merciless prejudice? Reflecting men recall with sober shame the ribald jeers and ravening bloodlust with which disorderly mobs surrounded the scene of his trial and communicated their evil prejudices to the minds of those who decided his fate. End quote. Source, Peter Golden, from O Powerful Western Star, American Jews, Russian Jews, and the Final Battle. Myth, quote, during the trial, which made national headlines, angry mobs besieged the courthouse, end quote. Jews in the Philo-Semitic Apartheid South. Quote, at the time of the Fagan murder, Atlanta was a Philo-Semitic city. its assimilated German Jewish elite were part of the financial and legal power structure. End quote. Steve Oney. Quote, the city of Atlanta has grown to its present greatness and must depend for its future growth upon young men like myself. End quote. Leo Frank. An important myth about the position of Jews in the South during the slavery and Jim Crow eras continues to heavily influence common perceptions about the Leo Frank case. Fundamental to the popular legend of Leo Frank is the belief that Jews in the South were somehow outsiders in a peculiarly evil culture and thus more prone to be victimized by the swirl of regional race hatreds. Nearly every published handling of the case is framed by the presumption that the well-known anti-black racism of the South also extended to Jews. Therefore, the fate of Leo Frank must be understood in that violent and xenophobic context. But the history of the American South shows that the, quote, atmosphere, end quote, for Jews during the eras of slavery and Jim Crow was not just attractive, but especially welcoming and, most of all, extremely profitable. The indigenous Creek Nation, decimated by the genocidal European invasion, were forcibly expelled to make way for the African slave-based plantation system. Jews arrived in colonial Georgia in 1733, 180 years before the murder of Mary Fagan, and they were well integrated in the settlement among their Gentile neighbors. One of the most popular writers on 20th century Southern Jewry, Harry Golden, himself a scholar of the Leo Frank case, addressed a persistent theme about Southern Jewish history he was determined to debunk. Quote, the point I hope to establish is that this most Gentile section of America has provided the most favorable atmosphere the Jewish people have known in the modern world. End quote. Golden was speaking specifically about the American South. The reverence that most Bible Belt evangelical Christians held for the, quote, people of the book, end quote, placed Jewish immigrants in a special class. Their presence was even taken by many Southern Gentiles as a sign of God's favor and his endorsement of their slave-based society. In fact, Christians in the American South were time and again militantly protective of their Jewish population. A century and a half before New York became the focal point of Jewish life, wealthy and cultured Jews thrived in the large elite community of Charleston, South Carolina. The city was both a major slave trading center and the birthplace of Reform Judaism, the branch of religion to which Leo Frank belonged and with which most Jews identify today. Since the earliest times, Georgia's Jews had enthusiastically performed their sacred Southern duties as slave masters and slave dealers, and all had shared in the benefits of the African slave trade. In 1901, the Jewish Encyclopedia made an astounding claim that put Jewish Americans at the epicenter of the slavocracy. Quote, the cotton plantations in many parts of the South were wholly in the hands of the Jews, and as a consequence, slavery found its advocates among them. End quote. The slaveholding Charleston rabbi Gustavus Poznanski summed up the Southern Jewish American credo. Quote, this, end quote, Charleston, quote, synagogue is our temple, this city our Jerusalem, this happy land our Palestine, and as our fathers defended with their lives that temple, that city, and that land, so will our sons defend this temple, this city, and this land. End quote. After the Civil War, Atlanta became the region's new urban and industrial center, attracting enough of their faith to have the largest population of Jews of any city in the South. Jewish upward mobility was described by Albert Lindemann as, quote, more striking in Atlanta than in most northern cities, end quote. And Jews routinely held positions of public trust in this ultra-Christian, militantly white supremacist region. At least 12 Jews held office in Jim Crow Atlanta between 1874 and 1911. Considerable representation for a group that never exceeded 3% of the total population. In 1875, Aaron Haas became Atlanta's first mayor pro tem, and his nephews, Herbert and Leonard, would become Leo Frank's lawyers in 1913. Joseph Hirsch, a millionaire clothing merchant, cotton goods manufacturer, and city council member, and other prominent Jews led in the establishment of Atlanta's racially segregated Grady Hospital. Scholar of Southern Jewry, Mark K. Bauman, maintains that of all the immigrant groups, the German Jewish community particularly, quote, exerted power beyond its size so that it wielded considerable political influence and preferment, end quote. Jews played a disproportionate role in the city's economy, a high proportion being merchants, wholesalers, and tradesmen. According to one scholar, Jewish, quote, business leaders owned many of the largest commercial and manufacturing enterprises that provided employment for many local citizens, end quote. Jews were partners in their own and Gentile law firms. They sat on grand juries. They served as bank founders, presidents, and officers. And they became officials in the Chamber of Commerce. Quote, from 25 to over 35%, end quote, of Freemasons and many of the highest officers in the Masonic order were Jews. Praise of Jews by their Gentile neighbors was effusive, as in this 1890 statement from an Alabama merchant extolling the, quote, Hebrews of Atlanta, end quote, in the pages of the Atlanta Constitution. Quote, there is no one element in this city's makeup more powerful than that. Look around you in any and every business, in every walk of life, and you will see that the leaders are the Hebrews. Everybody must admire the wonderful business capacity with which the race seems imbued. And everybody who makes any study of their home life will agree with me when I say that no people in the world are happier in their homes, none are better to their kinfolk, and none are better to the poor and needy. No religion has such well-organized, such sensible, and such beautiful charities. End quote. In that same year, a Jewish man surveying his own people's accomplishments crowed, quote, here in Atlanta, they, end quote, the Hebrews, quote, are found in all walks of life, and they own, I suppose, between $2,500,000 and $3 million worth of property. That is a conservative estimate, end quote. The editor of the Atlanta-based Jewish South was bursting with justifiable optimism about the fortunes of Southern Jews when he wrote in 1878, quote, although, end quote, Judaism's, quote, growth in all sections of this land of the free has been most prosperous, still the South succeeded in producing the loftiest of fruits, of the greatest bounty and grandeur. The Jews in Georgia, however, did more than merely become a part of the existing Georgia tradition. In many instances, they created, shaped, and influenced both the character and course of many of those traditions and institutions. End quote. Emphasis ours. When the home of National Pencil Company shareholder Oscar Pappenheimer burned down in May of 1914, 1 year since Mary Fagan's murder in his factory, the Atlanta police formed a cordon around the house to guard it overnight. It seems that Pappenheimer's jewelry collection was one of the most valuable in the city. Destroyed were, quote, the finest pipe organ in a private home in Atlanta, end quote, 3 Steinway pianos, and, quote, prized violins and cellos, end quote. Jewish racism in Georgia. Jews reveled in their position as leaders among the many ethnic Europeans that settled the American South. No public position was denied to them, and the positions they attained found them eagerly swearing a solemn oath to uphold the sacred tenets of the Jim Crow legal system, a system indistinguishable in its function and cruelty from that which is said to have victimized the Jews in Nazi Germany. In fact, from the very beginning of their presence in the state, Georgia's Jews were completely untroubled by the extermination of the indigenous landowners, or by the region's total reliance on black African slavery and all its accompanying evils. They participated in the violence and terror that framed the slave system and stood elbow to elbow with all whites as slavery's most ardent enforcers. Jews embraced the race laws of America voluntarily and encouraged their Gentile neighbors to adhere to them unquestionably. It would take the 13th Amendment, passed in 1865, to end American slavery legally. But a full 30 years later, in 1896, the editors of the Jewish South newspaper opined, quote, "Negroes are intellectually, morally, and physically an inferior race, a fact none can deny," end quote. One, quote, "cultured Southern Jew," end quote, saw the freed black man and woman as such a distinct curse on his own citizenship that he wrote, quote, "The extermination of this race is a necessary consequence of this state of affairs," end quote. Those words of genocide against blacks were not uttered in the hushed tones of a secret society meeting, or in a remote cornfield under a burning cross, but published in a respected Jewish newspaper. Charles Rubin, a Polish immigrant growing up in Georgia, recalled, quote, "I heard the term nigger used by Jewish sons of immigrant parents with the same venom and contempt as the term Zid was used in the old country," end quote, against Jews. The Ku Klux Klan emerged after the Civil War to violently force blacks back onto the plantation to perform the requisite manual labor so essential to white survival. Jews who held critical positions in the region's economy were well aware of its black foundation. So it is no surprise that Jews were actual members of that terrorist group and provisioned it with material support. The respected Atlanta resident Harry Simonhoff wrote with incredible irony, quote, "A lingering tradition of religious tolerance made it possible for Jews and Catholics to be members of the night riding group," end quote. Isaac Herman of Sandersville, Georgia, was a Confederate veteran and a full-fledged Ku Klux Klansman. He firmly believed the ex-slaves, quote, "best protectors were the old masters who had so lovingly provided for them," end quote. Judah P. Benjamin, considered the most important Jew in the history of the South, was not just the enslaver of at least 140 Africans. He was so important to the South's mission to maintain slavery, his face was imprinted on the Confederate money. After the Civil War, he fled to England, wherefrom he actually financed, with money from the sale of slave-picked cotton, the creation of the original Ku Klux Klan. There were many Jews who believed, as did Frank J. Cohen, editor of the Atlanta Weekly, The Jewish Sentiment, when he said, in perfect harmony with Klan doctrine, quote, "The white man will rule by fair means or by foul. God Almighty never created the Negro the white man's equal, and even an act of Congress will not change the trend of nature or swerve the white man from his determination to retain his supremacy," end quote. In 1898, Cohen openly voiced his opinion of the gory American lynching tradition. Quote, "The white man is not only superior to the black man, but will assert his supremacy at the proper time and in the proper manner," end quote. 2 weeks later, he wrote, quote, "North Carolina has recently done herself proud while several other states have had dignified hanging bees," end quote, lynching parties, quote, "provoked by the usual cause. Those Negroes who conduct themselves properly are respected and protected, but the lawless brute who violates the sanctity of the white man's home deserves death and usually receives it with electrical swiftness," end quote. And again on August 11th, 1899, quote, "The primary needs of the Negro race is obedience to the law and recognition of the rights of others. If the unmentionable crime against womanhood is persisted in, mobs in the future will deal with him as they have in the past," end quote. Writer Bernard Postol reveals yet more layers of Jewish complicity in black suffering at the hands of the most notorious organization of American terrorists of all time. Quote, "The attorneys for the Dragons, Kleagles, and other officials have not infrequently been Jews. Similarly, it has been shown that the manufacturers of the ubiquitous Klan nightgown have frequently been Jews. The present Klan has on several occasions insisted that it is not an anti-Semitic organization, a statement partially borne out by the fact that there are unquestionably Jewish members of the Klan in many states. End quote. Many writers have claimed that the Leo Frank trial rejuvenated the Ku Klux Klan. But not only is that claim untrue, such a feat would have been unnecessary. The very day Mary Fagan was murdered, April 26, 1913, was a holiday as revered in the South as Christmas is in the North. Confederate Memorial Day closed Atlanta to honor those, quote, sons of the South, end quote, who had actually attacked America and started a war that killed 850,000 Americans, all to maintain and expand African slavery. Leo Frank himself claimed to have been writing a letter to his uncle at the very time of the murder, a letter in which he reverentially references the, quote, thin gray line, end quote, of Confederate veterans parading outside his factory. Frank's prominent Jewish backers found no inconsistency in trying to solicit the notable attorney Thomas E. Watson to defend Frank, though Watson was, at the time, the outspoken ideological leader of the white supremacy movement in the state of Georgia. A decade after the lynching of Leo Frank, the KKK had an office next door to the headquarters of the Federation of Jewish Charities. In 1925, Atlanta Jews held a fundraiser, and Governor Clifford Walker and Mayor Walter Sims, both well-known Klansmen, quote, attended the affair as guests of honor, end quote. Ironically, Anti-Defamation League National Board member Dale Schwartz, the attorney who relentlessly pursued a pardon for Leo Frank in the 1980s, grew up in a merchant family in Georgia that knowingly sold disguises to Ku Klux Klan members. He said that, quote, whenever we sold a lot of white sheets, we knew there was going to be a Klan meeting, end quote. As elsewhere in the South, Atlanta Jews applied their extraordinary political and economic power in support of the racial status quo. White gangs met and organized at the O.H. Silverman Company building before their reign of murderous terror in the Atlanta Massacre of 1906. Pawnbrokers Morris and Samuel Greenblatt at 123 Peters Street supplied the racist Atlanta sheriff, John Nelms, with guns after he spread the false provocation that, quote, the outrages upon white women must stop if every Negro and many miles of Atlanta have to be killed, end quote. Of the dozens of blacks murdered, it is unknown how many were deaths involving guns supplied by the Greenblatt brothers. That same year, a Jewish member of the Carnegie Library Board voted to deny black Atlantans access to the public library. Foreshadowing the anti-Jewish humiliation policies of the Nazi era, Atlanta industrialist Oscar Pappenheimer, wishing to distinguish between industrious and vagrant Negroes, suggested that all blacks be compelled to carry documents which would indicate their appearance, employment, abode, and prior conduct. Pappenheimer was a major stockholder in the National Pencil Company and one of the company's officials who received Frank's weekly financial statements. Unfortunately, the acts of Jewish racism cited above, quote, were not isolated incidents, end quote, and betray instead a consistent and well-established Jewish pattern. Despite existing at opposite poles of Georgian society, blacks and Jews were often found in intimate but dysfunctional association. The recent Eastern European immigrant Jews nursed themselves into, quote, a major force, end quote, as peddlers and retail merchants selling overpriced inferior goods in the post-slavery black shanty towns. Moreover, the Jewish merchants traded, quote, in all things with African Americans, end quote, including such socially destructive commodities as beer, wine, and liquor. And in so doing, as one scholar writes, the merchants were, quote, not so much providing the lifeblood of the black community as injecting it with poison. End quote. Black servants in Jewish homes and businesses lived in, quote, Negro tenements, end quote, and one-room shacks, quote, clustered in alleys behind Jewish homes, end quote. Blacks provided a cheap, immobile, and optionless labor pool for the, quote, people of the book, end quote. But they also served to, quote, deflect local prejudices which might otherwise have been directed against Jews, end quote. Even with this critical black sacrifice in behalf of Jewish progress, there is no record of a single Jew using his office or influence to fight for a colorblind legal system. Before, during, or after slavery, right up to and long past the time when Leo Frank was charged with the murder of Mary Fagan. According to Stephen Hertzberg, quote, there is little evidence to suggest that any of Atlanta's Jews desired a greater amelioration in the condition of blacks, end quote. Rather, they, quote, clearly benefited from the system of white supremacy, end quote. Georgia laws specifically targeted blacks, not Jews, and were designed to keep blacks separate, defenseless, and exploitable. Blacks could not be buried in the same cemetery as whites, nor could they eat in the same room, ride on the same automobile or railroad car, or co-mingle with them in any way. Barbershops were racially separate, though black barbers could tend to white male patrons. Whites and blacks could not even serve time on the same chain gang. The 1914 Wood Amendment to the segregation law gave a white citizen the right to object to a black person moving next door to him. 10 years after Leo Frank murdered Mary Fagan, Atlanta's city council officially set up separate residential districts, and in 1931 it became illegal for a member of one race to move into a house that had been previously occupied by another race. Jews, by the way, were incontestably white. Sports teams could not play within 2 blocks of a playground set aside for another race, and movie theaters, pool halls, and other places of amusement had to serve one race or the other. According to law, quote, any ascertainable trace, end quote, of black blood in the veins of anyone made them by law, quote, colored, end quote. All of this madness was in full-fledged operation with the full participation of Jewish Georgians, even as Adolf Hitler was said to be fashioning the exact same set of laws against Jews an ocean away. Georgia's racial codes drew not a trace of Jewish indignation or protest. Perhaps the most poignant testimony came from the chosen leader of the Jews in Georgia, who told a journalist that the African American, quote, had no value in the South, end quote. That harshly racist assessment came from none other than the elected president of the Atlanta chapter of B'nai B'rith, Leo M. Frank. So Jews clearly entered the Leo Frank drama in 1913 as privileged leaders of Atlanta's white society. Anti-Semitism was unheard of and nowhere experienced, and went unexpressed, if anywhere, believed. Jews were highly regarded by the Gentile elite as useful, industrious, and even indispensable to the city's fortunes. The Gentiles embraced and assimilated with their Jewish brethren without hesitation, and both Gentile and Jew carried these religio-racial dynamics into the most explosive case in Georgia history. Be with us again next time when we present the next chapter of The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, Volume 3. The Leo Frank Case, The Lynching of a Guilty Man. Prepared by the Historical Research Department of the Nation of Islam, Chicago, Illinois. Copyright 2016 by Latimer Associates. All rights reserved. Published in audiobook form by the American Mercury with permission of the Historical Research Department of the Nation of Islam.